Welcome to another episode of Grading Garpax, a special series from the Rebuild a Bowl podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile, and today we're going to look back on what many view as the highest point of the Garpax era. We'll be grading all the notable moves from the 2008 offseason through the conclusion of the 2014 regular season. That means plenty of discussion about key pieces like Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, and Tom Thibodeau. This also is when Gar Forman was a prominent figure as GM, and John Paxson was more behind the scenes in his new role as Vice President of Basketball Operations. So, let's recap this period. When you look back at Bulls basketball from the 2008-09 season through the 2013-14 season, you can make a strong case that this is one of the best times in franchise history, outside of the Michael Jordan era, of course. From the thrilling playoff series against the Boston Celtics in 2009, to Derrick Rose's dominant MVP season in 2011, this period featured many memories that brought joy to Bulls Nation. Also, it was a time when John Paxson and Gar Forman made a lot of solid moves to make the Bulls an Eastern Conference power. Top of the list was drafting Derrick Rose. Of course, it was an easy move, seeing as the team lucked into the number one overall pick despite having a 1.7% chance of it actually happening. Still, you have to give the front office credit. The Michael Beasley hype was a real thing, and they could have easily convinced themselves that they already had a point guard in Kirk Heinrich. It was obvious from day one that Rose was a special talent capable of taking over any game. Rose possessed elite speed off the dribble, making him a nightmare for opposing players to guard. And even at 6'3", he was strong enough to finish at the rim among taller defenders. Rose won Rookie of the Year in 2009, and he helped the Bulls win 41 games and sneak into the playoffs as a 7th seed. The team faced the defending champion Boston Celtics, who were without Kevin Garnett. Despite losing in 7 games, the series is often cited as one of the best in NBA history, featuring lots of lead changes and 7 combined overtime periods. For the Bulls, Rose showed his prowess in the series, which included a rookie playoff record 36 points in Game 1. The series also featured clutch shots by Ben Gordon, as well as deadline acquisitions John Salmons and Brad Miller. It also featured a key steal and dunk by 2007 first-rounder Joakim Noah. With Gar Forman taking a more prominent role as GM in 2009, the front office started to map out a game plan to capitalize on their new star player. The NBA was a year away from an historic offseason that would feature many high-profile free agents, including LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. In order to take their swing at a big-name free agent, the Bulls let Ben Gordon leave for the Detroit Pistons in free agency and looked to start shedding cap space for the following offseason. Throughout the 2009-10 season, the team was in a period of transition. Rose, who was selected to his first All-Star team that year, continued to grow alongside Joakim Noah. Aside from those two, everyone else was being evaluated, including former 2004 draft choice Luol Deng and head coach Vinny Del Negro, who the team hired the previous year. Deng, who struggled the year before to find chemistry with Rose, started to develop his game alongside the second-year point guard. Del Negro, on the other hand, didn't really show any signs of improvement as a head coach. After a second straight 41-win season and first-round playoff exit, the Bulls fired Del Negro. They hired Boston Celtics assistant Tom Thibodeau as head coach in June 2010. The Celtics defensive guru was deemed a top coaching candidate and one who could potentially attract marquee free agents. Armed with their new coach and cap space, the 2010 offseason was poised to be big for the franchise. The Bulls were reportedly a top destination for LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade, but they struck out on the three, who all chose to take their talents to South Beach instead. Still, Garpax rebounded nicely by signing veteran forward Carlos Boozer and solid role players like Kyle Korver, Ronnie Brewer, and point guard CJ Watson. Even with a decent offseason, no one could predict the meteoric rise that started in the 2010-11 season. Thibodeau led the Bulls to a 62-win campaign, the most wins in the league, and a 21-game improvement from the year before. Derrick Rose ascended from an All-Star to an MVP in the blink of an eye, and the surrounding cast elevated their play too. Carlos Boozer proved to be a solid low-post scorer, and both Luol Deng and Joakim Noah took another step in their development under Thibs. Along with Korver, Brewer, and Watson, former draft choices Taj Gibson and Omer Asik formed what would become known as the Bench Mob. Thibodeau's crew was a hard-nosed, tough-minded bunch. Even when they seemed outmatched on paper, their energy and defensive prowess always rose to the occasion. Despite losing to the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Bulls came back strong in 2012. Even with Rose missing time due to nagging injuries, the team found a way to finish again with the most wins in the league. Unfortunately, an ACL injury to Rose in Game 1 of the playoffs sent shockwaves through the team. They were eliminated in the first round by the Philadelphia 76ers in 6 games. With Rose shelved for the entire 2013 season, the front office decided to part with most of the bench mob. Out were Korver, Brewer, Watson, and Asik. In were Marco Bellinelli, Nate Robinson, and a familiar face, former Bull Kirk Heinrich. The undermanned squad in 2013 still finished with 45 wins, and a young Bull was starting to emerge. Former 2011 draft choice Jimmy Butler became a defensive stalwart. Even after injuries sidelined Heinrich, Deng, and later Noah, the team still advanced to the second round and managed to take one game from a stacked Miami Heat team. The Bulls lost in 5 games to the Heat, who would go on to win the title that June. With Rose back in the fray, the Bulls decided to part with Bellinelli and Robinson and use their cap space on veteran forward Mike Dunleavy, who could help space the floor for Rose. After 10 games into the 2014 season, Rose suffered a season-ending meniscus injury, and the Bulls were forced to pivot. In January 2014, the Bulls traded Deng to the Cleveland Cavaliers and seemed willing to punt on the season. However, Thibodeau rallied the troops and made Joakim Noah the focal point of the offense. It turned out to be Noah's signature season. He not only won Defensive Player of the Year and earned All-NBA First Team honors, but he also finished 4th in MVP voting. Despite winning 47 games and locking up the 4th seed, the Bulls were bounced in the first round by the Washington Wizards in 5 games. While injuries certainly played a key role in keeping the Bulls from title contention, there were other factors that can't be overlooked during this period. For starters, Garpax chose not to pursue high-profile free agents after Rose's MVP season. They had chances to be part of the sweepstakes for players like Carmelo Anthony, Dwight Howard, and even James Harden, but they ultimately chose to stand pat. The front office also made miscalculations in the draft. Most notably, in 2012, they decided to use their first-round pick on Kentucky point guard Marcus Teague instead of selecting Michigan State forward Draymond Green. It's also important to note that toward the back half of this period, tension between the front office and Thibs began to grow at a dangerous level. Whether it was over injuries, players' minutes, or personnel decisions, the disconnect was starting to create a toxic culture in the organization. When Bulls fans look back on this period, they're forced to always ask, what if? What if Derrick Rose stayed healthy? What if Garpax got another star player? Outside of the Michael Jordan era, this period in Bulls basketball was the closest the team ever came to title contention. But even with those missed opportunities, John Paxson and Gar Foreman still built a core that we can look back on fondly years later. All right, so let's bring in our guest to help us grade this period of the Garpax era. I'm thrilled to be joined by both hosts of Ball on Bulls podcast. First making his Rebuildable return is Big Dave Watson. Dave, how are you?
I'm good, man. How you feeling, my man?
Not too bad. Really looking forward to getting into this era of Garpax. And making his Rebuildable debut is C-Dub, a.k.a. Chris. Welcome, Chris. How are you?
You're welcome, man. Hey, I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
You know, actually, real quick, I kind of feel like a schmuck with the way I pronounced bowl. So, Dave, give the people what they want. Pronounce that correctly.
First of all, never feel like a schmuck when you're doing that. You said it correctly when you said it last time. You did it right. Bow! It's all it is. Just bow!
It's the Avery Johnson. It's perfect.
Avery Johnson. That's right. Just get Avery in your system and let him on out. That's it. Get a little Avery in there and let him on out. Maybe some 1999 Avery Johnson, or when he was coaching the Mavs, Avery, or Alabama Avery, whichever one you want. Just get that Avery in, let it on out.
Before we start grading John Paxson, Gar Foreman, I want to talk a little bit about this period, and that spans from the time Derrick Rose was drafted through Joakim Noah's magical 2014 season. For my money, it's probably the most exciting period of Bulls basketball outside of the dynasty years. We had Rose, Noah, Thibs, the 2009 playoffs against the Celtics, the 2011 season, the hard-nosed defense. I think it was some of the most fun I had watching the Bulls. But I'll start with you, Chris. How do you view this era of Bulls basketball?
Somewhat hopeful. Like in this era, you kind of knew the Bulls were on the cusp of becoming something. Like you can contrast it with like the last couple of years. It's like the Bulls are bad. You know they're not going anywhere. Even though the Bulls, you knew they weren't going to win the championship. You had fun watching the team. You had people you could root for in times and Joe Kim. You had Joe Kim, MVP candidate. You know, you had that on your team, on the Bulls team. You had a top five, right? MVP candidate on your team. So you there's always some kind of like tightness to hope. Like there was like something maybe a year or two down the line, or maybe someone could get a little better, or because we have talent here. It's not like we bereft of talent because we have a possible MVP on the team, and we had an MVP on the team previously. So it's like it's just sort of like you kind of had a hopeful glow with the team. You knew the team wasn't going to win maybe championships, but you just had like and the hope you had was justifiable. It wasn't like it was false hope. It was like, you know what, I can shoot for the team. I can believe this team coming to the championship, or they're just fun to watch. So that's why I look back on that year particularly.
Yeah, you hit that on the head, Chris. Like it was the last era of hope for the Bulls so far. Like hopefully that continues, you know, going into this new era. But it was the last era of logical hope where you could sit there and say, I have one of the best three players in the NBA on my team. And it was, and you were logical in saying that. Having somebody like Derrick Rose just made you put your chest out a little bit more when you walked around town, you know, when you walked in other cities, because you're like, man, I got one of those dudes. We got one of those guys, one of those guys that SportsCenter is going to show those highlights of, one of those guys that you're definitely going to want to see on the nationally televised game that everybody wants to see, that people want to come out and check out. You know, they're going to sell out the stadium for it, whether they're at home or they're on the road. That guy's going to get you on that Christmas Day game. You know what I'm saying? And then everybody just fell in love with the team with Joakim Noah and Luol Deng and the Bench Mob and all those guys. So it was the last era of pure logical hope where you weren't looked at as a crazy person when you said the Bulls were going to win the championship or at least compete for it. You know, it was very logical that they were on that kind of level. So that it was the last era of like real hope.
With Gar Forman, this is the time period where he assumed the role of GM and John Paxson moved up to Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations. That happened in the 2009 offseason. I'll start with you, Dave. Did you even know who Gar Forman was before he took over as Bulls GM?
Hell no. I had no idea. Look, Gar Forman could have, I don't know, been working at Burger King, you know, serving me up, you know, some extra fries.
Looks like it.
You know what I'm saying? Or he could have easily been a manager of a Toys R Us, or he could have easily been running a Fortune 500 company. And you could have told me any of those things and I would have believed you. Like I had no clue who this man was. I was like, who? I heard his name. I don't know anybody named Gar. I thought it was something from a movie or something, like a Ben Stiller movie or something like that. I didn't know who he was. He looks like a cartoon character.
If he was running a Toys R Us, like you said, I think he would terrify a lot of children.
Hey, kids, honk my nose. It's like, no, the scary man is after us, you know. But it was so strange how he even, you know, came out of nowhere to have that. And then you look at his background, I'm like, well, maybe he was one of those scouts that, you know, was behind the scenes that you just didn't hear about because he's that good. You know what I'm saying? One of those guys that Clint Eastwood writes movies about or something like that. You know, like just out of nowhere kind of guy. Like, oh, you want to know, you know, how Magic Johnson got to the Lakers? You know, he's just the man behind the scenes like that. But I didn't know who he was. I had a pretty good grasp on the Chicago Bulls and grasp on their front office, and I was just like, who? Like it was just out of nowhere, and you're promoting them to what?
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. And you know, you left it alone, or at least that's what I do. I give people, you know what I'm saying, time to prove themselves, you know what I'm saying, or you know, just to find out. I don't want to just judge you off bat if I've never seen you before. So I was just giving him time because I'm like, all right, Pax, you know, you're in the prime of you know, this era, you know, making this move. All right, fine. You know, let's see what goes on. Let's see how it happens. And I'm sure we'll get into that later, how it happened and everything. But no, I had no idea who he was at all.
What about you, Chris? You know who he was?
I heard his name a few times on the radio. That's about it. So, no. So, you know, looks aside and how he sounded, it was like, okay, this dude. Okay, and part of me was still believing the packs. So it's more or less just a trust factor.
I think it's probably time that we get into the grading here. So for those of you just tuning into this series, let me explain how it works. Dave, Chris, and I will grade four categories on a scale of 1 to 5. Those categories are draft records, free agency signings and re-signings, trades, and coaching decisions. So let's get into the draft. There's no doubt that Derrick Rose was the best draft choice throughout Garpax's entire tenure. Rose was a three-time All-Star and League MVP, but can you give them credit for getting lucky? The Bulls entered the 2008 NBA Draft Lottery with a 1.7% chance of winning it, and instead of ending up toward the bottom of the top 10, the Bulls were picking number 1 overall. Still, you have to give Garpax some props for making the right choice. Michael Beasley, who was selected number 2 overall in the same draft, had his own hype. In fact, some thought Beasley made more sense because he filled a void at forward, and the Bulls already had a point guard in Kirk Heinrich. But ultimately, Garpax made the right choice with Rose at number 1. Aside from Rose, Garpax had other solid selections throughout this period. The Bulls did some wheeling and dealing to acquire the rights to Turkish center Omer Asik, who became a solid defensive role player off the bench. The next year, in a weak draft class, Garpax picked forward James Johnson at number 16 and forward Taj Gibson 26th overall. Gibson, who is still a valuable player in the league, enjoyed 8 productive seasons in Chicago, averaging almost 10 points and 6 rebounds per game. Johnson, on the other hand, had a short stint with the Bulls. He's gone on to have a solid pro career and was vital in acquiring the number 30th pick in 2011, which turned into Jimmy Butler. Butler was a diamond in the rough. Initially seen as a defensive stopper, over time he morphed into an all-star. After averaging just under 9 points per game combined in his first 3 seasons, Butler's scoring averages kicked up to over 20 points per game over the next 3 years of his Bulls career. In that same 2011 draft, Garpax also acquired the draft rights to EuroLeague forward Nikola Mirotic, who joined the Bulls in 2014. Mirotic would spend almost 4 seasons with the franchise. He averaged just over 11 points per game at some key moments for the Bulls, especially when the month of March rolled around. Despite some solid drafts earlier in the period, the last two certainly raised some eyebrows with the benefit of hindsight. In 2012, Garpax decided to use their first round pick on Kentucky point guard Marcus Teague. They allowed Michigan State forward Draymond Green to fall all the way to the second round. The Bulls worked out Green prior to the draft, and he was the preferred choice of head coach Tom Thibodeau. However, the front office felt it needed to beef up point guard depth after the ACL injury to Derrick Rose. Green is now a 3-time All-Star with a decorated resume, winning Defensive Player of the Year in 2017 and being named to All-NBA first or second defensive teams 5 times combined since 2015. And Teague? He played 3 seasons with the Bulls and has played a combined 91 games from 2012 to 2018. In the 2013 draft, the team decided to select New Mexico forward Tony Snell to help space the floor. Snell is a textbook definition of a meh player. In that same draft, the Bulls passed on names like Rudy Gobert, Tim Hardaway Jr., Alan Crabb, and Mason Plumlee, who have all gone on to been slightly more productive players, with the exception of Gobert, who is a multi-time All-Star. Still, Garpax turned in very solid drafts during this time period. Even with 2 possible blemishes on their record, they managed to draft 2 All-Stars and a couple of useful role players who were key to the Bulls' success. Alright, so let me first ask here. Had the Bulls not won the lottery in 2008, they likely would have picked around the number 9 spot. How do you think things would have gone, Chris, had they not gotten Derrick Rose?
Yeah, I'm trying to look at the 2009 draft afterwards. Like, so if they would fail, say they would got like a top 20 draft pick or something. Then you have 2009, of course, Jeff Teague and Drew Holiday.
Jesus.
I love Drew Holiday. So, yeah, so they've been messed up for quite some time because they've been stuck in the hall of the in the mediocre hell of basketball. Yeah, it would have boded well. Although, it'd been nice to see how Ben Gordon would have sparkled or shined or whatever with the Bulls roster. It would have been a Ben Gordon show, which would have been nice to watch. I love Ben Gordon, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But I followed the season draft. Well, you had DeMar DeRozan at number 9. I'm not sure what the draft picks were at that time, but, you know, they came out mediocre.
They would have maybe gotten James Johnson. Oh, wait, that did happen.
oh, my goodness. Oh, it wouldn't have been good. it was tough sledding going on from what I remember at that time. I remember watching the lottery, and the feeling I had was, you know, I didn't have any real hope or really anything. Like, I was like, well, there's nothing really here. I thought they were going to go guard, to be honest, because they had Joakim Noah, because they had Luol Deng, I believe, and Brad Miller and those guys. When they had, just because they had that kind of size, and Aaron Gray, for God, the White Panther was there. And I just thought that they would have went for a guard. Because at that time, I believe it was Kirk and Ben. I don't know who else off the top of my head was. I think Larry Hughes might have been there.
Yes.
But yeah, I thought they would have went guard. So I'm looking and I see DJ Augustine with it 9. So I think they probably would have took DJ Augustine, ironically, who ends up with the Chicago Bulls later on. Mm-hmm. But I think they would have went for a size, you know, just for a guard and everything like that, because Bulls and Ben Gordon weren't on the, you know, best of terms at that time. And I'm sure the Kirk Heinrich contract was coming up, and I'm sure they weren't going to, you know, just renew that. So I think they would have went guard with that. And we would have just been continuing into, you know, the mediocrity, 41 team, and stuff like that. I just think it would have been another 40-win season, because the highlight up until that point was, you know, when we beat the Heat in the playoffs. That was the highlight to that point. And it was like, oh, man, we might have something. Then next year, reality slaps you in the face. It was like, oh, okay. Like, I see what's up. And then Scott Skiles and, you know, all the other fiasco happens.
Oh, and Ben Wallace is old. I didn't know this.
he got headbands. Like, he shouldn't be old. He's got headbands.
I mean, if you look outside the you know, the Rose pick, they actually had a pretty impressive drafts early in that period. And in our last show, looking at 2003 to 2008, we talked about the 2004 draft, which is a pretty impressive one that brought in Ben Gordon, Luol Deng, and Chris Duhon. If you had to make, actually, if you had to pick a better draft, would you pick the 2011 draft that got Jimmy Butler and Nikola Mirotic, or do you think the 2004 draft is more impressive for guard packs?
Oh, man. I'm going to go, I know Chris won't, but I'm going to go with the 2004 draft, only because of Ben Gordon. Like, I know they did a good job 2011. I'm not taking that away at all. I mean, you made those trades. You got Nico, who was, you know, very high on a lot of people's list. And then you got Jimmy Butler, who was just still one of the greatest draft day finds ever, like, of all time. Seriously, to find him at 30 and get the value that you got out of Jimmy Butler was just incredible. But Ben Gordon was on the borderline of special to me. There was nothing really like that. The man was Steph Curry before Steph Curry. So the jump shot, the shooting was insane. He was the one who gave you that confidence also that I spoke about earlier. Because when the fourth quarter came around, Chris and I would be texting each other like, it's Ben Gordon time. Like, here you come. It's Ben Gordon time. Time to win the game. And then he would go and he would win the game. The man won sixth man of the year as a rookie. Mm-hmm. That's insane. Like, that's never been done before. I still don't know how he doesn't win rookie of the year doing that. That still makes absolutely no sense to me at all, but I digress. He was that kind of special shooter, and he was definitely carrying the team. Now, he didn't play defense, which is why, you know, he was not Scott Skiles' best friend, because he didn't play defense. He would rub you the wrong way with some of his comments, and, you know, the way he would kind of, you know, idolize, you know, just kind of isolate himself a little bit from the team and everything like that. And just the things he would say sometimes. And yeah, he was, you know, he was a confrontational somewhat, you know, and it didn't sit well with a lot of Bulls fans because Bulls fans don't like that kind of thing. They just don't like that in their superstar. They like the, you know, tough nose, work hard, nose to the grindstone, hard hat, lunch pail kind of guy. They always mm-hmm. have and probably always will. He really wasn't that. He was a hard worker for sure. I mean, you can't be that excellent at shooting and not be a, you know, a guy in the gym working hard. But the size that he was, I believe, hurt him. But it didn't stop him at all. It didn't hinder him, man. He would just break people down mm-hmm. and end their life with these just cold-blooded shots, man. I love watching Ben Gordon. So for me, getting him in that draft and getting Luol Deng also in that trade from, was it Minnesota that Luol Deng got drafted by?
Phoenix Suns.
Phoenix. And getting Luol Deng, and I mean, he was high on everybody's list. He's higher than Chris and I had him evaluated. His career went exactly like Chris and I predicted. I mean, exactly to a T. We set it out. We set it out with his rookie year to a T. It happened exactly like we thought it would. But at that time, Luol Deng was very high stock and high value and considered to be that kind of guy to have on your squad. So I liked having him and the Luol. I've never been a huge Nico Mirotic guy. I thought he could play, but he was shriveled when we needed him and then would ball when we didn't. And if I got the two between and Jimmy Butler is your only saving grace in that, then I'm going to take Ben Gordon and I'm going to take Luol Deng because Ben did something I never saw before, which is a rookie winning sixth man of the year.
Yeah, I'm going 2004 too as well.
What?
I think
upset.
What?
Hold on. First of all, you know I don't like Nico that much. And, no, you know.
You know who else is in that draft, Chris.
And I'm not the biggest Jim Butler fan as well. So I like Jim Butler. But for what you said, though, like Luol Deng had a career True. On his team. Uh-huh. And then he was the anchor. He was, I mean, for crying out loud, it was talking about trading Kobe for him. I know it was crap. But a lot of how the Bulls' future was, like, defined was kind of like basically around him. How the office kind of invited him. And Ben Gordon, like you said, Dave, wonderful to watch. I love watching Ben Gordon. Very stoic out there on the court, which I love, and was not scared to hit the game with a shot and take over the game. There was the Ben Gordon time, of course.
Wait, hold on one second. Talk about the third person they got. Talk about that Ooh. Third guy, Chris Duhon.
Listen, I told you not to utter that name.
Come on! No, you chose 2004. You gonna have to.
I told you not to utter that name.
I can't believe you chose Chris Duhon.
It was out. Listen, I like Nico, but no. But look, no, I'm not a big Chris Duhon fan.
No, that's an understatement of the century.
Oh my God! Can run a fast break to save his life. I mean, my God! All right.
I gotta be honest. I'm actually really surprised because I thought that there would be more conversation about that 2011 draft because I think these are usually the two that are considered both Garpax's best drafts. And in 2011, I think Jimmy Butler ended up, because he was such a diamond in the rough, what his ceiling ended up being, I think, far exceeded what Luol Deng was, what Ben Gordon was. And I just thought Jimmy Butler alone would have, because I don't know. I'm kind of stunned. For me, it's 2011. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so, like, I was expecting maybe a little more love for that. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with that.
Jimmy Butler. Listen, Jimmy Butler spent years proving matching every kind of goal Chris and I would set. Every year we had a goal set for Jimmy Butler. And I mean, he would exceed it every single year. When we first started, we were like, why are y'all calling him Jimmy Buckets? He don't give no buckets. Now call him Jimmy Whistles because he gets fouls. And then all of a sudden he started scoring. And we're like, okay, well, you can do that, but can you average 20 a game? And then he starts averaging 20 a game. Like, yeah, okay, you can do that. But, you know, can you be an all-star? Okay, then he went to the all-star game. Yeah, but can you be a multiple-time all-star? Then he became a multiple-time all-star. Yeah, okay, but can you lead the team to the playoffs? Then he takes the team to the playoffs. But we always knew it was that line. It's that line right there. That's where it always stopped with us and Jimmy Butler. was when it came time for the money in the playoffs. Jimmy Butler would always just disappear, and we would never see him. We wouldn't hear from him. Regular season Jimmy Butler is a beast, is a monster, is a dog. Playoff Jimmy Butler, not so much. That's what we kind of lost it at.
This was also the period where Garpak started to slip a little bit in the draft. But what was worse, picking Marcus Teague over Draymond Green in 2012 or picking Tony Snell over Rudy Gobert, Eric Bledsoe, Avery Bradley? I'll start with you, Dave.
Ooh, that's a heck of a question. But I'm going to go with 2012. I'm going to go with picking Teague over Green. I mean, oh, Lord, where do I start? Looking at Tony Snell over Gobert, you didn't know what Gobert really was. You know, he was a big dude. You know what I'm saying? You know, he was tall. And you just didn't know. I'm not saying we thought Tony Snell was going to be good. All we knew about Tony Snell was he went to the same college as Kawhi Leonard. That's all we really knew about Tony Snell. And he had the greatest second summer league we ever seen in our lives. That's all we knew about Tony Snell. But Draymond Green coming out, you knew about Draymond Green. Okay, just watching him at Michigan State and seeing him, how he played. You knew that that's also who your coach wanted was Draymond Green. You were like, okay, coach wants him. He, you know, Tibbs like, okay, this is the guy I want. You know, this is the guy I really need, think that will help us for this team. Now we're going to go with what we really don't need. A backup point guard. We really don't. You know, backup point guard is not an emphasis, you know what I'm saying, at that time for the Chicago Bulls, because you had, you know, you got D. Rose. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't a huge emphasis on that. And I know D. Rose, you know, I believe that was the year he had the injury, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. But Derrick Rose was, you know, it was Derrick Rose. So Marcus Teague wasn't a huge emphasis on that, getting Marcus Teague on your team. And C.J. Watson was still there, if I ain't mistaken, still on that squad. So passing on Draymond Green, who you have watched what Draymond Green has done and the effect he has had at Golden State. He is the heart of that team. They don't win those championships without him. He affected the game to the point where they couldn't win without him. You saw what happened when he got suspended for kicking LeBron. And it was over for them after that. He scored, and people forget how he balled out that game seven. I think he had like 30 points that game in that game seven. He was incredible. Like, and Draymond, how many defensive players of the years has this man won? Like, it's unbelievable the things that he's done and the star that he has become. He became a star, you know what I'm saying, like that we hadn't seen in the mold of like a Dennis Rodman. He's not on that level. I think Dennis is better, of course, but in that kind of mold, you know, he became that. Rudy Gobert fell into Defensive Player of the Year awards because he's tall. And they gave him a couple because they're like, well, Rudy's tall. And I'm not saying he can play. I'm not saying Rudy can't play. But if Rudy has a bad season, we go, Rudy's the guy you look at if he has a bad season. You're like, yeah, I can see that. You know, I know that. You know, you're looking at him, you thought he was Mark Eaton or something like that. So the things he's doing is impressive, but we didn't see it coming. Draymond, you kind of knew would be solid. I don't think you knew he would be all-star, you know what I'm saying, most important player, you know what I'm saying, on that team and heart of a team and things like that. But to pass on a guy like that for Marcus Teague is just makes your brain hurt so much. It really does. It makes my brain hurt. And it was, you could have used him. Like, how can't you use something like that? You can use that. I can find a 7-foot tall dude, okay? But a guy with that kind of heart and the way Draymond plays and that kind of intelligence that he plays with and tenacity and all those things that, you know, that Bulls fans love and that Tibbs loves, you know, a defensive guy. Oh my goodness, man. Can you imagine how much better he would have been defensively?
Yeah, follow-up question. You must really like Draymond Green?
Yes! No, for this right here, yes. Yes, I like Draymond Green. Yes.
I figured.
In this question, I like Draymond Green a whole heck of a lot over Marcus Teague.
We'll give Chris a chance here. Chris, what do you think? Missing on Draymond Green or missing on those other names in 2013?
Oh, it's the same thing, man. You can't pass up on Draymond Green. Look, I remember when Teague's brother told him not to come out of the draft. Mm-hmm. Literally, he said, don't come out. And like, yeah, but some reason, the last couple of years, the Bulls were looking for this mysterious backup point guard. It's like, I don't know what was going on. Like, remember, Dave? It's like, hey, well, we got to find a backup point guard.
Yeah, right.
This He's got to find this magical backup point guard.
Got to have it.
I'm like, what? And Draymond Green, and I think I actually watched college that year a little bit. I remember thinking, like, wow, he's such a great all-around player. He's going to be a very good player in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Did I think they're going to be this? No, I didn't. But I thought he's going to be a very good player in the NBA. Very good is very good. I mean, he can shoot, score. One of the things I liked, one of the facets about the game I liked in college was that his IQ on the floor in terms of passing the ball. You could tell on the floor that he really knew what was going on the floor and he could redistribute the ball to his teammates. And I'm like, this guy is that big, and I know he has some weight issues, but playing in Michigan, he's a good player. And then you hear, then the Bulls woke him out. I think the Bulls woke him out, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing like a highlight of him being interviewed, like, yeah, I want to come to Chicago or something like that. And then then to spot your coach.
I don't want to get you guys worked up, but imagine if you had a lineup heading into probably the 2015 season of Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, Pau Gasol, Joakim Noah.
Yeah.
I don't want to, have a sour taste in our mouths heading into our grading, but I got to do it. So, look, I mean, just kind of taking it into totality, looking at all these drafts that happened, including the Derrick Rose draft, Jimmy Butler, the solid draft with Gibson, the missteps there in the last two drafts with Marcus Teague, Tony Snell. I'll start with you, Chris. On a scale of 1 to 5, how would you rate the drafts during this period of Garpacks?
But I don't think the Tony Snell draft pick was so bad because he was a three-point shooter, a new three-point shooter, and like they said, he played with Kawhi Leonard. I was cool with that. There was somebody we passed up. Not Gobert. I thought somebody else we passed up on a draft pick. But anyway, I would give it the fact that you drafted Derrick Rose. It's like you start off with is the one the best, right? Or five the best?
Mm-hmm. Five's the best.
Five's the best, right? So you kind of got so yeah, you drafted MVP. You drafted Derrick Rose. You kind of got to get a five off that. The misses in this period, there aren't really huge setback misses because you drafted Derrick Rose. So Draymond's your biggest miss, and no one knew Draymond was going to be this good. I think people thought he's going to be good, but it's good. I know drafting Derrick Rose is a no-brainer, but you got to give him credit. They did it. So 4.5.
4.5. You know what? And actually, just to jump in on that, I mean, in 2008, it wasn't necessarily considered a no-brainer. There was a lot of people, Stacey King, who wanted them to pick
Beasley.
So, it wasn't that much of a slam dunk, but, I mean, in hindsight, it definitely looks like that. What about you, Dave? Scale 1 to 5.
1 to 5, I'll give him a 4. Strictly, basically what Dub said, even though you just heard my passionate plea about Draymond Green and Marcus Teague, you still got Derrick Rose. You still got the MVP. You still got the third best player in Chicago Bulls history. You still got Jimmy Butler. You still got Taj Gibson. You got guys that filled out your bench mob and the guys who were defining for that Chicago Bulls team. So, for those reasons, for those reasons right there, just for those reasons, you get a 4 because you got your, you got your linchpins right there.
Okay. I'm actually going to do the same as you, Dave. I'm going to give it a 4. I mean, look, like you both said, the first two, drafts of that era were pretty good, right? Derrick Rose clearly gets you a 5 out of 5. 2009 was a really solid draft in what was considered kind of a crappy draft. And 2011, I thought, was a complete home run given where they were drafting. So those were 3 solid drafts. Tony Snell, I mean, there's worse mistakes that you can make. The Draymond thing alone, to me, and picking Marcus Teague is enough to drop it. So I'm also going with a 4. So to recap, Chris, 4.5 out of 5. Dave, 4 out of 5. Me, 4 out of 5 for drafts. So let's get to the free agent signings and re-signings. When it came to free agency acquisitions during this period of Garpax's reign, one word comes to mind: necessary. Their signings were never flashy or risky, but they usually helped fill a void on the roster. The Bulls really didn't make a lot of moves in the summers of 2008 and 2009. In fact, in 2009, the front office had a chance to re-sign Ben Gordon to a long-term deal. However, with Derrick Rose in tow, they passed, and Gordon signed with the Detroit Pistons. So why'd they let their leading scorer walk? The summer of 2010 was setting up to be one of the best free agency periods in league history, and there were many intriguing names set to hit the open market, including LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. The second tier would also feature solid options like Amari Stoudemire, Joe Johnson, and Carlos Boozer. With Rose trending towards all-star status, the Bulls saw an opportunity to add a difference maker or two to the roster. For the year leading up to July 2010, the Bulls cleared out additional cap space, leaving Rose, Joakim Noah, and Luol Deng as the only pieces to build around. Many national reports linked the Bulls to LeBron James months leading up to free agency, and the team was also garnering interest from Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. However, all three decided to join forces with the Miami Heat. Garpax responded by signing Carlos Boozer. While Boozer was considered a stat stuffer and an unreliable defender, he did fit a need on the roster, providing low post scoring and rebounding on both offense and defense. From 2010 to 2013, the front office also managed to add solid veteran role players to their roster. They signed key pieces like Kyle Korver, Ronnie Brewer, CJ Watson, Rip Hamilton, Marco Bellinelli, Nate Robinson, and Mike Dunleavy. All these players proved to be valuable contributors, whether it was in the starting lineup or off the bench. With Derrick Rose set to miss time with an ACL injury in 2012, Garpax brought back former Bull Kirk Heinrich to take minutes at the starting point guard spot, and when Rose injured his meniscus in 2013, they acted swiftly by signing DJ Augustine, who also proved to be a key acquisition for the team. However, for all the solid signings, it's fair to wonder why they couldn't acquire more impactful players. Many have speculated that the Big Three already knew they would take their talents to South Beach, but could Garpax have tried to woo them a little bit more, and maybe tried to trade away Luol Deng's contract pull off a stunning change of heart? Even in 2013, high-profile free agents like Dwight Howard and Andre Iguodala were available and would have been significant additions to the Bulls roster, but Garpax never really seemed interested in joining the race for either player. While signing an impact player would have made things a bit more interesting, you have to admit that Garpax did bring in free agents who filled their roles to a T, and that's not always easy to accomplish in free agency. Okay, so I want to start with the offseason in 2009. Had the Bulls kept Ben Gordon, do you think the Bulls would have ascended the way they did a couple years later?
Yeah, but they have ascended the way they did. Wow, that's a really good question. I would say yes. I think they still would. They would have been a good basketball team going forward. I mean, because look at what happened when you lost Ben Gordon. They were searching for Ben Gordon. After they lost Ben Gordon, what you got? You bring in Keith Bogans, and you got Ronnie Brewer, and
Rip Hamilton.
Rip Hamilton, you know, rest, because it was R.I.P. It was rest in peace Hamilton at that time. That dude was done. He was a rat. And so you were searching for a Ben Gordon. And yeah, you could have used a Ben Gordon in those games against LeBron James when he's like, oh, let me just shut down your best player and the game is over. And nobody else on your team can create. Nobody else on your team can create their own shot. And nobody else we have to worry about. And it's fourth quarter. Let me just get on your best player, which is what, you know, LeBron did. So, yeah, Ben Gordon, you could have used that. you could have definitely used that and needed that kind of scoring, that kind of punch and that kind of cojones. You know what I'm saying? That kind of guy who's got that at that point in time. So. Yeah, I think Ben Gordon would have did nothing but help, because you can't cheat off of Derrick Rose at all, because you're going to leave that sharpshooter wide open. And I mean, Ben doesn't miss when there's people in his face. You know what I'm saying? Like, wide open Ben Gordon, he really ain't missing. So, yeah, we could have definitely used him at those times. So I think, yeah, they would have been mean. The Bulls would have been quite beastly with Ben Gordon.
Can you imagine if playing against Miami, you don't know how things would turn out, right?
Right.
The roster 100%, but, you know, having someone hand the ball, could dribble. But you don't know. Ben Gordon fell off after he left the Bulls. And you wonder if that was bound to happen with the Bulls, especially with all the coaching changes and whatnot. Maybe he wouldn't have fell off. You don't know. Why did he? Why was he just not an NBA player on any other team? Was he that mentally tough enough? But on the Bulls, he was. And it'd be interesting to see if that would have if his game would have even gotten better, if he actually would have started. And yeah, having a scorer and a guy that size who could take his own, make his own shot, could dribble, go to the hole hard, and that's almost invaluable. So you give those guys awards, and which is what he got. So I can only imagine that the Bulls would have been better with Ben Gordon going forward.
You know, and it's kind of weird when you look back with hindsight. It would have been nice to have that scoring punch, because, and one of the reasons that Ben Gordon wasn't brought in was that 2010 free agency was looming, and it was the decision of, do you pay Ben Gordon or do you give yourself a chance to go after a big star? And I think, like, you know, it's weird to kind of think about it now, because, you know, they strike out on the big three, and if you had Ben Gordon and you had him in the mix with some of these other guys, it might have been pretty interesting. And I actually want to get to that 2010 offseason. You know, what do you think kept the big three, either individually or collectively, from coming to Chicago? You know, was it something that was already pre-planned, or did Garpax just not close the deal? What do you think, Chris?
You know what? Given that, you know, the last few years, you know, especially with this free agency this year, how wild it is, how uncertain things are, you know, you can't, the curtain kind of has been peeled back a little bit the last couple of years in the NBA of our free agency, and it's revealing that how unpredictable it actually is. So back then, you know, I would have told you there's no way in the world, I probably said it, hell, that it's coming to Chicago, because they're going to Miami, and, you know, why would they come to Chicago? They say Miami or D-Wade. But now, you know, given what we've kind of learned about free agency, maybe the odds were more in our favor than we think, you know. But back then, I had no faith that was going to happen at all. Why? I just think, you know, there are so many pros as far as staying, you know, down south, you know, the city with the taxes and whatever, whatnot. Mm-hmm. And plus, you come into a guy's home who's built a foundation, you know, with that franchise. And you have Mr. Pat Riley. You're going to lean toward that. But given what I've learned last couple of years free agency, I think it's more random than people think. Not random, but like more up in the air, I would say. I remember even in the interview with Kobe Bryant, someone coming to Chicago. You go, yeah, right, he would never come to Chicago. He talked about the interview. You know, he said he was legit for a house. Mm-hmm. You know, back then I would laugh at you, but you know, people get interviewed years later, and in hindsight, you know, you learn a bit more that, hey, maybe the odds were more in favor than you think. Maybe they did blow it. I don't know. They just said the wrong things, but we got Pat Riley and the Miami Heat, the Wade's team and foundation built already, you know, teammates. You know, that's, you know, you bring the guys on the team, you know, they have to buy in. The guys don't have to buy in. And you have the guy there already who's established himself as leader, a little bit easier. So I didn't think that was coming to Chicago, but, you know, mm-hmm. I don't think it's much of the front office's fault.
Well, I kind of disagree with that, Chris. I do think the front office played a big reason as to why they weren't here. I do think, though, Chris, I do agree. Like, it didn't cross my mind to think that they were going to be here. I just didn't see it as a thing. I wanted it, you know, I just didn't see it. I also didn't see, you know, him going to Miami, because, you know, at that point in time, that didn't happen. You know, you didn't join other superstars. You know, that thing didn't happen. Like, him and Chris Bosh going there was different. So, but the reason I say that the front office definitely had blame in this was the quote I read from D. Wade. And I clipped it out just so I could read, because I remember arguing with somebody about this on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I said this to him, that, because he was, I think he was saying, it was for another argument, him saying, the Bulls, Scottie Pippen and the way the Bulls did Pippen and Jordan wasn't going to stop free agents from coming here. And the quote was from D-Wade was, I think the biggest question is about loyalty. I know one thing about Miami. It's a very loyal organization. I see what they do for their players when their players get done with the game of basketball and how loyal they are. I don't know about the Bulls. I see Michael Jordan isn't there. I see Pippen isn't there. You know, those guys aren't part. So for me, that's a very important thing because I'm a very loyal person. So he's telling you already, you know what I'm saying? Like, that was his concern. And this is when the free agency thing was going on. This wasn't hindsight. You know what I'm saying? Well, this is when it was happening.
That piece, I remember being very controversial because you remember Chris Broussard had put out the report that LeBron was eyeing the Bulls as his top destination. And I remember the smear campaign against Dwayne Wade was, oh, this is him trying to lobby Dwayne or trying to lobby LeBron James away from the Bulls. And I remember Casey Johnson wrote this large sort of rebuttal piece from Jerry Reinsdorf where they got all these people that quoted, I think they quoted Bob Love and a bunch of former players about, you know, how great Jerry is as an owner and how management's been great to them. It was like, I remember that being such a big deal. It was right on the eve of free agency. And the weirdest thing was that Dwayne Wade took a meeting with the Bulls to start free agency. It was so bizarre.
And that's the point I was saying. Like, I know it might have been, you know, recruitment also for Miami, but he was and according to him, he was seriously considering coming to the Bulls at the same time. So, like, that's how I looked at it like that. Like, okay, if he's saying I'm seriously considering coming to the Bulls, and then you put this out, maybe you're playing both sides of the field. I guess it's what you're doing. But to say something like that still, to say, like, yo, I see Mike ain't there, I see Scottie ain't around, that's a thing for me.
What do you guys think of the response, though, from Garpax after the Big Three said no? They responded with, of course, Carlos Boozer, but they also filled out with, you know, the rest of that bench mob. Kyle Korver, Ronnie Brewer, you got C.J. Watson in a trade, which was a sign-in trade, and just some really solid pieces to round out that bench. And, you know, people forget they actually tried to sign J.J. Redick to that offseason, and the Orlando Magic matched it.
Yeah, let me take this real quick since we're getting on Boos. I want to hear what Chris has to say about Carl, another one of his favorite players. Just real quick, when this happened, it was Chris hit me up when all this was going on. He said, we're going to end up with Carlos Boozer, aren't we? And I said, I don't know. We can know anybody. He said, no, I know what's going to happen. We're going to end up with Carlos Boozer. He's going to come in. He's going to score a bunch of points, get a bunch of rebounds. And people are going to be like, oh, Carlos Boozer is good. And he's not. And he just went on a tirade about Carlos Boozer. And he was right. Carlos Boozer would get you, like you have to say, 15-9, 50% from the field. Those are incredible, great numbers. But Carlos Boozer, you know, just wasn't that dude that everybody thought he was, that his numbers indicated that he was. And yes. It was just funny to see that because Chris called that exactly how it was. Go ahead.
I went on Facebook. You know, I never posted on Facebook. I went on Facebook and I said, Carlos Boozer is not the player you think he is. He is not. He's not. And he wasn't. And people fell for it. Fell for it. The Bulls. Well, the Bulls had to get him. No, there's no one
else to get. Yeah, they had to. They had to get Carlos Boozer. I mean, it was the move they had to make for sure. Does he get a bad rap? I don't know. I don't know if he gets a bad rap. I mean, he was who we thought he was, so it's hard for me to say if he got a bad rap or not. But you knew he was going to score. You knew he was going to rebound, shoot a good percentage. But
it's all Joe.
Yeah, you know he was going to yell and not play defense. And, you know, he looked good trying hard. He was a master of looking good trying hard.
Yes.
But really doing nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just looked good because he had the tats and the size and, you know, the bald head and the yelling and, you know, all those things. And, you know, he definitely had moves on the inside. And I don't want to take away from that because, dude, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. Those are really excellent numbers. But it's like scoring, you know, it's like scoring at garbage time sometimes. You know what I'm saying? Like, our guys' numbers kind of get to inflate. You're like, man, he had 48. Like, dude, it was down by 40. Like, it's like, yeah, young of us will say that. But yeah, like, they had to get him, but he was exactly what we thought he was going to be.
What about the rest of that free agency class, though? So, again, you had Korver, Brewer, C.J. Watson, Keith Bogans, Kurt Thomas. But some solid pieces that did end up being pretty valuable that season.
Brewer, man, he was a good find. And I didn't know he was that good of baseline player. And that good defensively. He was so active on the floor. That's it was true. Almost like he was good, but he didn't know how good he was as far as just playing basketball. He would just run around. He ended up in the right spot sometimes and get a steal. And then, lo and behold, he found a jump shot. He didn't look like he could shoot a jump shot, but he challenged a jump shot. And then you had Culver come in, prime, and a little more athletic than he is now, a little more spry. I was a big fan of Culver at that time over J.J. Redick. Just because J.J. Redick, I believe a couple of times, he was out the league, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he had to take a break pretty much because he couldn't play. And Culver's always been so steady. So I found him more reliable than J.J. Redick. And I thought he had a better all-around game than J.J. Redick at the time. It's kind of reversed now. It's kind of funny. But at the time, Culver, I was really high on Culver. So I was happy to see him. Yeah, and Brewer. Yeah, Brewer was just nice because he was like a pleasant surprise. Like, he was always doing something positive on the floor. Even though he thought he might do something wrong, the fluky layups, he'll hit. It just I enjoyed watching Brewer, man. He was a nice player. Nice little player.
The bench mob, I mean, like, you just named all those players. They were important. And those were solid finds, you know, to round out your team. But I guess that's all you could really call them, are really solid finds. Now, they were important guys, like, because Kirk Thomas, I've heard stories about Kirk Thomas as far as his loyalty and how he protects people, you know what I'm saying, how he protected players on this team. That's stuff you need, you know, you need that kind of thing. You needed a Kyle Korver to come out, you know, and score like that. You needed a Brewer, like Chris just said, guys like Brewer and things. I was not a huge fan of C.J. Watson. I had to check his last name to make sure we weren't related. I wasn't a huge fan, but
it was okay.
He was cool. He was all right. Very sometimes. Oh my goodness, very sometimes. But they do a great job finding those guys in the mud. You know what I'm saying? It's like the polished diamond that is already sitting there in front of their face. We really don't get, you know, it's like you go to the store, you know, with your parents and you go down the aisle with all the Oreos, you know, and the name brand snacks. And you're like, oh, we're going to get those. And your parents are like, we're not getting those. And you go right to the generic aisle. You know what I'm saying? The bag that just says cookies. You know what I'm saying? And you get the box of cereal that says flakes. You know what I mean? And that's it. And it's no writing on them. It's like, what are the ingredients? Corn. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's it. Like, and then you get home and you put your stuff on them. You know what I mean? You put your sugar on it. You put your bananas. And you're like, you know what? These are pretty good. You know what I'm saying? These are all right. I can deal with these. These are good. These are solid. I enjoy these. That's kind of what it is. It's like, you know, for the Bulls and when they come to getting these kind of guys, they're good at getting those non-name brand guys and making it taste, you know, really good when they get on the court. They're either because they're coached up nicely, you know what I'm saying, or either it's just because it's their time and they're in the right place at the right time to thrive. But yeah, that's kind of how it is. It's kind of how it is.
I'm sorry, they seem very, very, very professional on the court at times. And I'm still trying to figure out if Guys in the Mud is like a weird porn title or a good movie name.
What?
I'm debating that. Like, Guys in the Mud. What? That was like, I never heard that before. That was clever.
This is Grading Garpax, the explicit version. I want to get to the other, and I think a very forgotten bench mob before we grade this whole era. That forgotten bench mob from the 2012-13 season. You had names like Nate Robinson, Marco Bellinelli, Nasir Muhammad, but really, I mean, Bellinelli and Nate Robinson, those two ended up being key pieces in the Bulls playoff run that year. And I'll start with you, Dave. What did you think of that collection? Was that an underrated bench mob? I think like they're forgotten now.
If they're forgotten now, then I'll call them underrated, because that team, that was one of some of my best memories. Was that era right there? Because that was right when D Rose got hurt and Nate Robinson came in and man, put the team like on his back in so many games, including the playoffs, and gave us so many wonderful moments. I just have wonderful memories of that. And of course, people love Nasir Muhammad for, you know, pushing LeBron to the ground. And I still remember Mike Dunleavy's like greatest playoff game was when they played Milwaukee and he just lost his mind in that game. I still remember that. He went crazy. Like, I like that benchmark. And oh my goodness, I don't want to sleep on Marco Bellinelli. That dude,
oh my goodness,
utility player. Like, he did everything they needed. He ran point. He played the two, the three, the four. Like, he did anything they needed. And he did it well. Actually, he did it pretty well. I didn't even know he could play the point guard position. I laughed when they said they were putting Bellinelli at the point guard. I was like, get out of here. We are ridiculously hurt. This is crazy. And he come out there and it's like, Bellinelli's got like 15-9. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's insane. Like, yep. And played well and wouldn't turn the ball over, you know, and ran the offense, you know, very well. And having Nate at the two, those were crazy things. Like, those were some of my favorite memories. So if people have forgotten about them, then I'll call them underrated if they've forgotten about them.
Yeah, I agree with Dave. This is the Bulls team that you knew weren't going to win a lot, but you were going to have a fun time watching. He wasn't a perfect player, but he was a very good, talented player. And, of course, Dave, you know, Bellinelli, that's my guy, man. Dude, that man was Scottie Pippen out there. I mean, we watch games, like, is he wearing a point guard right now? Like, seriously? Is he power forward? Right. Is he shooting guard? Is he taking the last shot? Is he posted up for the last shot? Is he shooting fadeaways? Did he dunk on somebody? And then you can tell he wore the bleep out after the game. He played like every position. Hey. Go home so as hell. You know he played every game.
I got a question for you guys. Who's better, 94 Pippen or 2013 Marco Bellinelli?
I'll hang up and listen to your response.
I'm not gonna be the same, man. I'll just like Dave. I'm just like, this guy's more skilled than I thought.
Yeah.
And it was like he didn't want to do it, but he could tell the coach asked him to do it, and he was like, okay, I'll do it. And then he's willing to do it. And then at the end of the day, he wasn't quite good enough to get you over the hump, but it was fun watching him try to do it.
So let's look at the totality of free agency throughout this era of Garpax's tenure. On a scale of 1 to 5, and I'll start with you, Dave, how would you rate free agency during this period?
I give him a 2.5, basically because of what I just stated with the guys get, like Bellinelli and the Nate Robinsons and Dunleavy's and the memories that they provided, but they were never able to land that big time player. They were always connected to those big time guys. Like, you would always hear guys' names come up, like, oh, this guy's connected to the Chicago Bulls. Oh, we might go after Dwight Howard and Iguodala and LeBron James and D-Wade. Like, you know, it was always their name was connected to this, but it never really happened. Like, even like you said with JJ Redick, they went after, you know, got him to an offer sheet, and then the Magic, like, nah. And he's not even that kind of dude, but it's just the fact that, you know, he was on that tier of, you know, almost that kind of free agent that you want, you know what I'm saying? And that guy that you need. But they took some stuff and they polished it up real nice, you know what I'm saying? And it turned it sideways almost. I'm sorry, I went to wrestling mode, excuse me. But I would give them a 2.5 because as much as I like those bench mob guys, they just weren't the diamonds that the Bulls needed and the guys that the Bulls wanted.
I would give them a 3. Or, well, that's more than a half, though. Damn. Okay, I'll give them 3. I give them 3 because even though they couldn't land the big free agents and they couldn't, you know, land a big 3, but they did. They were able to be competitive and they were able to entertain me at some point. And these like Nate Robinson, Bellinelli, these outcasts came in and they played hard for the Bulls. They did. And so I just have to give them credit for doing that, for falling back and having a fallback plan and doing the best they could while striking out and getting the big free agents.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the same number as you, Chris. I'm going with a 3 out of 5 also. And I think the thing that I just keep looking at is they did a pretty good job rebounding from not getting those big names, but you do have to ding them pretty significantly because, you know, you brought it up, Dave. There were times they were rumored for guys like Dwight Howard, Iguodala, Josh Smith. I remember in 2013, but we kept hearing, no, they don't want to go over the luxury tax, especially if they don't know, you know, the status of Derek. And I also want to ding them. One thing I didn't call out here, the poison pill with Omer Asik is still one of the biggest mistakes I think they ever made.
He was balling.
And he,
Well,
and not to mention, they let him walk for nothing, and they did have a chance to probably trade him at the deadline.
Yeah, you're right about that. I forgot about that. Yeah.
It could have really got something for him.
Okay, so to recap the free agency signings and re-signings, Dave gives him a 2.5, and both Chris and I give Garpax a 3 out of 5. In part 2, we'll discuss the trades and coaching decisions during this period of the Garpax era.